Welcome to Crime, Corruption, and Cocktails, the true crime podcast where we look at cases of corruption and negligence and examine their historical and cultural implications. Today, I'm drinking a mojito. What are you having, Jenny?
I'm drinking a spiked lemonade, and on this week's episode, we look at the death of Azaria Chamberlain, a 9-week-old baby girl who was killed by a dingo on a family camping trip. Azaria Chanel Lauren Chamberlain was born on June 11, 1980, in Mount Isa, Queensland, Australia, to parents Lindy and Michael Chamberlain, who served as minister at Mount Isa's Seventh-day Adventist Church. On August 13th of that year, Azaria and her family, including her brother's 6-year-old Aiden and 4-year-old Reagan, left for a camping trip at Ayers Rock, now known as Uluru. The family arrived on August 16th and explored and climbed the rock throughout the day. As Lindy and Azaria explored a formation called Fertility Cave, she looked up to see a dingo staring at her. She would later tell a detective that she had the feeling that the wild dog was quote-unquote casing the baby. On the night of August 17th, the Chamberlains barbecued and spoke with other campers. That evening, fellow camper Sally Lowe walked to a trash bin and noticed a dingo following 4 or 5 paces behind her. Not long before 8 p.m., Lindy put Reagan and Azaria to bed and returned to the barbecue. Minutes later, Azaria began crying, and Lindy saw a dingo emerge from their tent. Lindy ran for the tent, but Azaria was gone. Campers heard Lindy cry out, quote, "A dingo's got my baby." Frank Morris, the first investigator to arrive, shined a light across the floor of the Chamberlain's tent, where he noticed blood on one of the rugs. Aboriginal trackers following the dingo prints by the tent saw drag marks in the sand, in 2 places where there was a shallow depression in the sand, where a bundle had been set down, likely while the animal rested. The depressions contain the imprint of a knitted garment and next to one, small dark patches in the sand, which they took to be blood. The area was searched extensively, but sadly, Azaria was not found. A week later, pieces of her blood-soaked clothing were found near the base of Uluru, but her matinee jacket that Lindy claimed she was wearing at the time was missing. The story immediately grabbed national attention. Some law enforcement officers did not believe the Chamberlain's story and did not think a dingo would be able to carry the child, and there were no reports of infants being killed by dingoes. The first coroner's inquest into Azaria's death was held at Alice Springs. On February 20, 1981, Magistrate and Coroner Dennis Barrett found that Azaria had met her death when attacked by a wild dingo. In an unprecedented move, Barrett allowed his concluding remarks to be televised in order to dispel rumors around the case. He was stated as saying, quote, "You have not only suffered the loss of your beloved child in the most tragic circumstances, but you have all been subjected to months of innuendos, suspicion, and probably the most malicious gossip issued in this country," end quote. The inquest was supportive of the Chamberlain's claims and critical of the police's investigation. However, people including forensic dentist Kenneth Brown weren't happy with the inquest. Pressure from Brown, James Cameron, a British forensics expert who tested Azaria's clothing, and Northern Territory government and police led to the inquest being overturned. Police searched the Chamberlain's home, and the case quickly became tabloid fodder. The second inquest into Azaria's death opened in Alice Springs in 1981. The barrister assisting the coroner made clear from his questioning of the Chamberlains he believed Lindy took Azaria from the campsite on the evening of August 17, 1980, and murdered her in the family's yellow Tirana with a sharp instrument, most likely a pair of scissors. Many of the questions directed at the Chamberlains concerned the presence of blood in the car. By then, public opinion was not in favor of the Chamberlains. They were spat at in the street and even received death threats. On February 2, 1982, the inquest concluded that Lindy be charged with murder and Michael as an accessory after the fact. The Chamberlain's trial began in September of that year, and all of Australia seemed to be watching. It would appear by information available that some members of the jury had already made up their minds before the trial, with at least one juror boasting to their neighbor that he was glad he was on the jury so he could quote-unquote get the bitch. The scene outside of the courthouse was chaotic, with people selling quote-unquote souvenirs, including t-shirts and tea towels, with images of dingoes and the date of the trial.
The prosecution argued that Lindy murdered Azaria and hid her body in the family's car before she and Michael, quote unquote, disposed of it. Ian Barker opened the case for the prosecution, telling jurors Azaria, quote, died very quickly because someone, quote, died very quickly because somebody had cut her throat, end quote. Much of his cross-examination of Lindy was devoted to poking holes in her story about seeing a dingo in the vicinity of the family tent. The prosecution's case depended heavily on circumstantial evidence and convincing jurors that the blood that had turned up in the Chamberlain's car belonged to Azaria. They brought forward numerous experts to support their argument. Biologist Joy Cole, the prosecution's 35th witness, presented some of the most damning evidence. Cole told jurors that her test proved that the blood found on the dash support bracket in the Chamberlain's car belonged to an infant. On cross, defense counsel Phillips forced Cole to admit all the plates she used in her actual blood test, quote, have been destroyed, end quote, a practice she called, quote, standard procedure in our laboratory, end quote. Phillips also raised questions about the accuracy of her test results, suggesting that the blood, if that's what it was, might well have come from a bleeding hitchhiker picked up by the Chamberlains in 1979. Crown witness Bernard Sims had investigated about 24 attacks by dogs on humans in his job as a London odontologist. Sim saw nothing consistent with a dingo attack in Azaria's clothes, claiming that a dingo attack would cause a quote-unquote copious bleeding, and indicated that a baby's head could not fit into the jaws of a dingo. In cross, Sims reaffirmed that the opening of a dingo's quote, mouth wouldn't allow it to get over a baby's skull, end quote. Defense attorney Andrew Kirkham then surprised him with a photo of a dingo with the head of a baby-sized doll taken, crown first, with the canine teeth reaching to the doll's ears. Notably, the Northern Territory government and the Crown did not share their information and evidence with the Chamberlain's defense, which is normally required by law to be done. The Chamberlains and their defense team were also forced to find out from the media what the prosecution or government was planning, as the prosecution would tell the media their side without informing the Chamberlains, even to the daily witness list for court. The defense pointed out that there was a large amount of blood in the tent on the mattress, carry cot, and tent, then what was claimed to be blood in the car. They also argued that three people had heard Azaria cry out, one of which was a total stranger to the Chamberlains. Lindy had also seen a dingo coming from the tent with something in its mouth, although she could not say what it was because of a rail being between her and the dingo. Fellow camper Judy West reported that she heard Lindy cry, quote, the dingo's got my baby, end quote, just, quote unquote, 5 to 10 minutes after she heard a dingo growl, quote unquote, low and quote unquote deep outside the tent. She also testified that earlier she had been forced to shoo off a dingo that had grabbed her 12-year-old daughter by the arm and pulled. Some of the most riveting defense testimony came from defense dingo expert Les Harris, who contended that a dingo, after prey the size of Azaria, would, quote, make seizure, which would be of the entire head, and it would close its jaw significantly to render their mammal immobile, end quote. It would be most unlikely to, quote unquote, hang around with its prey, Harris contended. Harris said dingo kills in the field produce, quote unquote, very little blood, and that they characteristically shake their head after taking prey, quote, to break the neck, end quote. Senior park rangers also testified that dingo attacks on children did occur in the area leading up to Azaria's death. Phillips, in his summation, stressed that the prosecution failed to provide even a remotely plausible explanation as to why Lindy Chamberlain would want to kill her own child. Despite this, the Chamberlains were found guilty. Lindy, who was pregnant at the time, was sentenced to life in prison with hard labor, and Michael was handed down an 18-month suspended sentence. The public largely agreed with the verdict.
1 month into serving her sentence, Lindy gave birth to the couple's second daughter, Kalia, in November 1982. The Chamberlains did not get access to the Crown evidence for testing until just prior to the final appeals process, and both appeals failed. In an extraordinary move, the Northern Territory Attorney General had argued personally In an extraordinary move, the Northern Territory Attorney General had argued personally before the Territory Supreme Court for evidence to be withheld from the Chamberlains, and it was granted. Following the trial, reports began to cast doubt on the prosecution's evidence, and a movement grew in support of the Chamberlains. The Chamberlain Innocence Committee was created in hopes to create public support for a new inquiry. In 1985, John Bryson published a book about the case titled Evil Angels, The Case of Lindy Chamberlain. It drew attention to the case's numerous forensic inconsistencies and helped change the public's attitude. Most damning of all the new reports was one showing that what the prosecution had claimed was the blood of a murdered child in the Chamberlain vehicle was in fact not even blood at all, it was paint emulsion. 3 years into Lindy's sentence, police investigating the death of a fallen climber found Azaria's missing matinee jacket near a dingo den at the base of Uluru. The matinee jacket was very significant because Lindy had said that Azaria had been wearing it the night she was taken by the dingo, but this was dismissed as a lie during the trial. On February 7, 1986, local reporter Frank Alcorta was furious when he learned the matinee jacket had been held in secret for days. He threatened to publish an article if the Northern Territory government did not release Lindy from jail or call a royal commission, and Lindy was quickly released. That same year, Trevor Morling led a royal commission into the Chamberlain's convictions, and they were eventually overturned. In May 1987, Justice Morling issued a 379-page report critical of the investigatory techniques of Joy Cool, James Cameron, and other key prosecution witnesses in the trial. He put great weight on the credible accounts offered by the Chamberlain's fellow campers, noting, quote, "It is extraordinary that the persons at the barbecue area at the time of and immediately after Azaria's disappearance accepted Miss Chamberlain's story and noted nothing about her appearance and conduct suggesting that she had suddenly killed her daughter," end quote. Regardless of Morling's findings that evidence did support a dingo attack, the inquiry returned an open verdict. Lindy and Michael were exonerated in September 1988, and 2 months later, a film version of Evil Angels was released with Meryl Streep portraying Lindy and Sam Neill as Michael. It seemingly did little to change the Australian public's opinion. To American audiences who were largely unfamiliar with the case, the, quote, "a dingo took my baby" line became a joke that was parodied on shows like The Simpsons, Seinfeld, and Frasier. In 1990, Lindy published her own book, Through My Eyes, which detailed the impact the episode had on her family and her family's lives. The next year, Lindy and Michael got divorced, and the following year they received compensation from the Northern Territory government, including $1.3 million for Lindy's wrongful imprisonment. In 2012, a fourth inquest took place. Coroner Elizabeth Morris found that the cause of Azaria's death was as a result of being attacked and taken by a dingo, and her death certificate was updated to reflect that. The case had since been made into a TV series and an opera. Michael sadly passed away in 2017, and Lindy is now remarried. She shared that the process has made her learn not to judge quickly and to be true to yourself because you'll be judged no matter what you do. Lindy is currently working on a book for children as well as another on grief and forgiveness. She gives seminars, lectures, and keynote addresses on a variety of topics, including privacy and the media's responsibility in news and reporting and the realities of life in prison. Del, what are your thoughts on this notorious case?
I think this case is very disappointing, and it shows the tunnel vision effect that can happen when prosecutors and law enforcement think that they know what happened and they bend evidence to support that assertion and ignore evidence that goes against it. The fact that they were just violating her rights in order to throw her in jail is insane. And the fact that the media was essentially culpable with this deprivation of rights, I think that they probably should have been sued as well, because they definitely seem to be working jointly with the prosecution to make Lindy look as bad as possible. But my, I guess, central question is, why were they so just gung-ho to not believe her? This is Australia. I'm sure wild animal attacks are not unheard of. So why, when she shared that a wild animal had attacked her daughter, were they so just the gusto to say, no, you're lying? we know best, even though what we believe is not supported by the evidence, it's not supported by eyewitness, and it's not supported by logic, because, you know, like we stated, they couldn't give any reasons as to why all of a sudden Lindy would have murdered Azaria. It's definitely good to see that she is using this experience to try to help others. And I definitely wish her nothing but the best. What about you?
I totally agree. It's really shocking how far this went. And I don't know, from my American point of view, it was a lot more complex than I thought it would be. Like we said, I think for a lot of Americans, it really was just a joke. I don't think anyone really understand the fact that someone's baby was frankly eaten by a dingo and then they were wrongly imprisoned. I mean, to me, that's not anything to joke about. Yeah, it really is shocking that people were so hell-bent and had tunnel vision, especially because of that first inquest. I think the police were really pissed off after that, in my opinion. And I agree, it is kind of hard to believe that people wouldn't see a wild animal as being dangerous. I think there was, from what I read, I think some people were confused as to, I guess you'd say, the personality of a dingo, because I guess there really weren't many reports of infants or people being killed by dingoes, maybe attacked. But some people thought dingoes were more timid than they really are. I also had read that there was a little bit of like city folk, if you will, not understanding, I guess, like the wilderness aspect of the case either, and a wild animal. But I mean, dogs are domesticated. We keep them in our homes and like they can kill people. They can kill children. So I don't understand. I agree. I don't understand why people could not comprehend that. And it was more believable to them that a woman would kill her baby, which is like one of, you know, the worst things that can happen in the public eye. I mean, it's horrible when any child is murdered, but there is something specific about a parent killing a child that gets everyone very, like, rightfully angry about. I think it's really disgusting to see the antics people were pulling, too. I mean, to be selling merchandise outside of a courtroom. We talked about that for the Lorena Bobbitt case. And I mean, that's one thing, because the I don't want to call that case ridiculous, but like, no, thankfully nobody died in that case, but a baby died. Like, regardless of whether she was attacked or killed, why are we selling merchandise surrounding a trial where a child was murdered or, again, attacked? I mean, again, it's not anything to joke about. And I really don't understand. I don't understand that. Just that all the wrong turns. I mean, yes, you can say that people were like really early into like DNA, but this wasn't even blood. You know, I've heard that it was so many things. It was paint. It could be paint. It could have been a milkshake. It could have been like noise reducing material that was in many cars in the country at the time. I mean, talk about poor police work. And the defense, I'm glad they had an answer for so much of this stuff, but it's just shocking that the jury, I don't want to say fell for it, but that the jury would believe that despite the fact that there were so many people supporting the Chamberlains. And like I said, the defense had comebacks for a lot of these arguments. I did read that some of this, I think, was difficult for the jury to understand, like what was presented by the defense versus what was presented by the prosecution, which I would say is probably still a big issue in trials today, which is a whole other conversation, but that's kind of interesting. And to just see how like back and forth people were on her, and even to this day, and that's something we'll talk about in a second, even to this day, people think that Lindy killed her daughter, even though she's been proven like numerous times at this point that she did not. I can't imagine how that is. And it does seem like I've seen some interviews with her and she seems like a very, I don't want to say wonderful person, but I'll say like what you said. I agree, Del. It seems like she's trying to do a lot of good in her life after having been through so much. And it's amazing that she does still have a positive outlook after everything. She received like very little apology. She was called, you know, like the worst things in the world. And she's still going on with her life and trying to make the most of her life with her children.
So unfortunately, sensationalism and media bias often affects trials. The death of Azaria and subsequent trial was one of Australia's biggest scandals, biggest miscarriages of justice, and possibly the most publicized case. It often towed the line between being news and being entertainment. Journalist Bill Hitchens said the case, quote unquote, had everything. This included an attractive young family, a baby, and the backdrop of the mythical Uluru. Very often, the only ones giving out interviews was the Northern Territory government, which they used to push their argument. The defense did not give interviews because doing so would give the Crown an unfair advantage. As we said, they were not sharing evidence with the defense. The Northern Territory government usually has something new for the reporters, but the Chamberlains were busy trying to defend themselves and only released new information during actual court cases. The Chamberlains were in a difficult position as the quote-unquote news from the NT was about bloody handprints, slit throats, and arterial blood spray under the car dashboard. Again, all of this salacious information was coming out in the media without the defense being notified or even shown it at all. Liddy said they had initially agreed to talk to the press because they wanted to help warn other parents about how dangerous dingoes could be, but rapidly found out they had no control over how they were portrayed. Liddy said, quote, "If I smiled, I was belittling my daughter's death, and if I cried, I was acting," end quote. It was crucial to Liddy that the interviews be accurate, as so many rumors and lies had already been told by others. Some of these rumors that were perpetrated by the media included that the Chamberlains killed their baby as a religious sacrifice, reports that the Chamberlains were somehow linked to the 1978 Jonestown massacre, that Azaria might have been killed to atone for the sins of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that Azaria's name meant quote-unquote sacrifice in the wilderness, that Azaria was sick and the family wanted to get rid of her, and the Chamberlains only dressed Azaria in black.
Reporters frequently observed that many Australians concluded from televised interviews that the couple's demeanor didn't match what they would expect from a couple that had just tragically lost a child. The NT used the media to get their view across, but when journalist Kevin Hitchcock aired his report highlighting the flaws in the case and showing that Lindy and the eyewitnesses were telling the truth, the greater public began to press the NT for a review. At one point, the Northern Territory was getting 60 letters per day from the public about Lindy. They had to hire someone just to deal with those letters, who they called the Lindy Lady. The leaders asked Lindy to stop her supporters from writing as they were causing the government too much hassle, and Lindy replied that they already knew how to stop the letters by releasing her. One media personality credits the fact that the Chamberlains got paid for their first interview after Lindy got out of prison with being the start of checkbook journalism being more and more accepted. That same person is one that Lindy has refused to do interviews with, as they persistently asked her questions on air about her personal life in a supposed quote-unquote news interview. The questions were asked on a topic that the interviewer had agreed not to question her about as well. The media's attitude toward Lindy changed throughout the years as they reversed their reporting in order to keep people's interest and keep selling papers, magazines, or TV ads. Lindy's team was told that during much of the 1980s and early 1990s, that even putting her name on the cover or front page fairly granted sales increases of 20 to 50%. Some magazines even had to double their print run, making a several million dollar windfall for them. In some cases, reporters apologized to Lindy about the headlines on some of their articles, saying that the editor, or in the case of one newspaper group, the owner, had come through and dictated the headline to make it more sensational. It is the quote-unquote hook that makes us curious enough to watch the show or buy the paper or magazine. Even with the cause of death on Azaria's death certificate changed, the Chamberlain's attorney, Stuart Tipple, wondered whether any amount of evidence would satisfy some Australians who still blame Lindy, saying, quote, "I could show them a video of the dingo taking the baby and it wouldn't convince them," end quote. So Del, I want your thoughts, but I also have a question. Since so many of these media outlets were making money from selling her story, you know, asking her to sit for photos, provide interviews, is it unreasonable that they share some of these profits with Lindy?
So thinking about just the general sensationalism that she experienced, I think that it is disheartening. And again, the fact that the government was complicit with the media in promoting a false narrative against one person is gross. It's gross incompetence, and they should have been made to pay not just a financial cost, but a professional cost as well for their pattern of behavior, especially since it had a real effect on the jury, as we saw with the one person saying he was happy because he was going to quote unquote get that bitch. And just the wild rumors that for me, borderline slanderous in what they were saying, connecting her to the Jonestown massacre and saying that they sacrificed their child. Like, who the heck comes up with these things? Like, I feel like the media really was let off easy in this case for the things that they were publishing about her. And it definitely had a financial price to it. So to your question of sharing profits, I don't know. While I think that they should have had some financial responsibility to the emotional damage that they caused her, I think that's what they should have paid out for. Not necessarily reporting on the story, because I think that, you know, not just in this case, but looking at the wider scope of news, do we want to have a system where in order to cover a case, the news has to pay individuals for covering that case? And if we're tying it to profitability, what is that line? You know, how profitable does a story need to be in which the news has to pay out to someone? What happens in cases where they're making money from a story and the person is guilty of a crime? You know, how does that align with like Son of Sam laws and making sure that people aren't profiting from their crimes and other things that may make them infamous? Yeah, I would lean on the side of, I would be fine with a civil suit, but I wouldn't be okay with a profit sharing arrangement just because of, again, all those externalities that I just laid out. What about you?
I have some complicated feelings too, mainly because it does remind me of the Son of Sam laws. Like, I think it kind of opens a can of worms, but I guess it is like fairly common for some people to receive money for appearing on shows or like talking in the news about these things. Like, it's definitely not unheard of. And I mean, there was a time, you know, when celebrities would have babies and like sell the pictures to magazines, and I don't know if they all kept the money. I think a lot of people would make donations based off that. But I mean, celebrities make money selling their stories and things. So it's a little different, but people do it. So in a way, like, yes, I do think she should be able to make some of the money, or, you know, at least be able to be paid for some of this. And I agree. I think like she probably should have sued some more of these people. I'm sure it was just like too much work and annoyance with everything else she was dealing with at the end of the day. Because it is like quite slanderous and ridiculous. And the fact that it does, what it's interesting, because the media, like, it is what helped her get out of prison in the end, but it also like destroyed her life and sort of sent her to prison in the first place. So it's interesting how that has worked over the years. And it clearly did such a job that people still are not convinced of her innocence, and they would not be convinced no matter what anybody did, which is really upsetting. That's like never something we like talk about much with cases. And something else I saw, like we mentioned, you know, the government was sharing all these like really gruesome, salacious headlines. And what are the Chamberlains going to say? Like, we didn't do it? Because that doesn't sell papers and get people to watch, frankly. And, you know, it's kind of disturbing to think about, but that the truth isn't always what sells, as we can obviously see in this case.
While dingo attacks on humans in Australia are rare, they do happen, and young children are most vulnerable due to their size. The dingo is a medium-sized canine that's native to Australia and has a lean, hardy body adapted for speed, agility, and stamina. Dingoes are much more dangerous. Dingoes are a much bigger danger to livestock, especially to sheep and young cattle. In some areas, like the Australian Sand Island Gari, these attacks are becoming more common. Mayor George Seymour said attacks involving dingoes and children have become almost a monthly occurrence, and that there are more dingoes past 2 years than in the previous decade at the national park. The Queensland Park and Wildlife Services QPWS warned a pack of dingoes at the northern end Kari had lost its, quote, natural wariness of people, end quote. They believe the pack was inadvertently or deliberately fed by visitors and residents. One particularly quote-unquote high-risk animal was killed by injection on Wednesday after an attack on a 24-year-old woman who was hospitalized after being mauled by four dingoes while jogging down the beach. That dingo had also been quote-unquote responsible for four quote-unquote very severe attacks, including one on a child this year, according to Principal Ranger Danielle Mansfield. A Department of Environment spokesman said the dingo that was put down weighed 17 kilograms, quote, which is heavy for a dingo, indicated it had been fed, end quote.
Aboriginal rangers have communicated that visitors of the island need to listen to the warnings that are given. Tessa Waya is the ranger and community engagement officer at Butchola Aboriginal Corporation, or BAC, and she said, quote, it does come back to our visitors heeding to those messages that we do give out when we are trying to educate them. We're not doing this because we want them to have a crappy time. We want them to go out there and enjoy the beauty of Gari, end quote. The BAC represents the native title interests of the Butchola people, who are the traditional owners of Gari. The quote-unquote Wathda, or camp dingo, were their companions, helping them hunt and protecting them from bad spirits. The Wangari were wild dingoes that roamed the sweeping coastline, hunting for wallabies, lizards, and rodents. When the last indigenous people were removed from the island, all the dingoes became wild. Animal behaviorist Bradley Smith does also blame visitors in search of the perfect social media shot for changes in the animal's behavior. He said, quote, we don't have a dingo problem on the island, we have a people problem, end quote. In July 2023, two women were fined $2,300 each for taking selfies with the animals in a blatant breach of quote-unquote dingo safety protocol, repeated at length in signage and brochures available to tourists on the island. Smith says people are ignorant to the danger of dingoes because they are small and puppy-like. In 2001, 9-year-old Clinton Gage was attacked and killed by a dingo on the island. The incident and the resultant killing of 31 dingoes caused a large outcry among the residents. There were many protests, and the suggestion was made to erect fences. The locals and rangers want to avoid another culling like this. Cheryl Bryant from Save Fraser Island Dingoes, and Fraser Island is the former name of Gari. It was changed in, I believe, the summer 2023, says the government should consider capping tourist numbers during peak holiday periods to keep both dingoes and tourists safe. And she said, quote, we need the dingoes. If it comes down to it, they're more important than the tourists, end quote. Della, any thoughts on some of these more modern issues that are coming up with dingoes?
And it's definitely not surprising, no matter how friendly or, you know, approachable a wild animal looks, it's still a wild animal. And so it's definitely very unfortunate that, you know, even more recently, you have situations where people, especially children, are being harmed by these wild animals. While I don't agree with the animals are more important than tourists line by Cheryl, I definitely think that it's important that tourists are properly informed and incentivized to follow the rules to keep themselves safe from wild animals. What about you?
So I will say, I think when she says that, she just means like, we don't need to have the tourists here, not like the tourists can get hurt. That's okay. Just to clarify. But I agree. Like, we see this all over the world, like in the US in particular. We always hear this when it comes to our national parks and like people approaching buffalo and getting gored to death because of that. And Like, I'm sorry, but what did you think was going to happen? You're told, like, there's signs all over these parks. Don't touch the wildlife. Don't interact with the wildlife. Like, be at a safe distance from them because they are wild animals. You don't know what's going to happen regardless of how cute they are. And I think in the case of the dingoes, too, they look like dogs and dogs are our pets. So people, I think, can maybe, like, get confused by that. Something I had read also said that, like, people think, well, oh, they look so skinny. I need to feed them. They're supposed to look skinny. That's just how their bodies are. Something I had read said that they could eat all day and they would still look skinny. So it's not an issue. And it really is becoming a danger. I mean, you can go and look at these numbers and it's kind of scary. What the mayor was saying is right, that there have been tons of attacks since, I believe, 2021 in Gari. And it's upsetting to see, especially because, I mean, it's not like the dingo's fault. I think a lot of it does rely on people just not being stupid and following the rules. Like Tessa Waya said, these rules aren't in place to make you have a not good time. We're there to keep you safe and to help you enjoy this beautiful island. We want to share this with people, but we want you to do it safely. And that's not too much for them to ask, in my opinion. I guess even still to this day, a little bit of a misunderstanding around dingoes and the danger that they do have. They're not necessarily like the most dangerous animal in the world, but they're not an animal that you want to approach. And I thought it was interesting that, like, at least in this area, I don't know, like, people, how many years later, decades later, people are like still kind of putting themselves in danger. And like, for as big of a case as, you know, Azaria Chamberlain, Lindy Chamberlain, Michael, as big as that was, I guess people just kind of ignore that today.
That wraps up this week's case. Thank you for listening. Let us know in the comments what you think about the death of Azaria Chamberlain and the aftermath. You can read more about this case and how to support us in the links below. We will be back next week with a brand new...
As always, stay safe.